Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals and the official podcast partner of Glee 2024.
In this special collection of episodes, we'll be sharing over 20 interviews that we recorded live from our podcast booth at Glee this year, offering fresh insights from the innovators and trailblazers that keep the garden sector growing.
So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
Later in today's episode, we'll be speaking with the allotment cook, Jane Hickling. But first, we caught up with Adam Taylor from Taylor's Bulbs. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
So, Adam, why don't we kick off by you just giving us a little bit of an overview of Taylor's Bulbs?
Well, we're a family business, fourth generation family business.
Okay.
We're in Lincolnshire and we concentrate on supplying garden retailers in the UK and Ireland.
Okay, with?
With power bulbs. We're also, I suppose, it's really important, I guess, to add that we're farmers as well. So we have a farming business. We grow daffodils, but around the daffodils, we also farm wheat, sugar beet, potatoes, cauliflowers. So it is a proper farming business as well.
The proper Lincolnshire farm.
So you say you farm the daffodils. I mean, are they, what are they actually, are they just used as daffodils and cut flowers, or are they, is there a purpose, for other purpose for them, being a novice?
They're flowers. Yeah. What other purpose do you need, Phil?
Well, often actually you can see a field of daffodils and you won't see any flowers because they're harvested for the flowers.
Right.
Our primary objective is bulb production.
Right.
So we're growing them for the bulbs.
Yeah.
We will take some cut flowers off them and we supply them actually into garden centres, a lot of them. But actually our primary function is bulb growing.
Right.
So
can I just ask, so did you start out as a farm and you were farming the crops then diversify to make a bit more money? Bulbs, is that how it evolved?
Yeah, so it was. It was a small holding that my great-grandfather was provided after the war.
Okay.
And he, along with others, established that they were all doing the same thing. All these little crown colonies were all growing the same crops, and so they needed to do something different.
Right.
They recognised the relationship with the Netherlands, Holland, because our local district council is called South Holland. And we're in a drained area of the fens. And flower production came to the fore. So it started with various different flowers, then into tulips, then into daffodils.
Right.
And it's now daffodils that we grow. But that's how it started. That's the history to it.
Okay, interesting. So you're part of the Taylor's family and you've grown up with the business. Do you have a favourite bulb yourself? Or is that do you have a favourite child or something?
It's a bit tricky, isn't it?
Yeah. We won't tell anyone.
It changes a lot.
Right.
Of course, it's the daffodil, is it? No, it does change a lot.
Yeah.
I will always, I just coo and woo over different things as I see them. So I wouldn't say I've got a particular favourite.
I mean, we are in daffodil peak planting season now, aren't we? So is there one that you would recommend to maybe a new gardener who's never really grown the bulb before?
Yeah, I love Camelot.
Oh, okay.
It's a striking late flowered yellow. It's really uniform, which sort of goes with my OCD. And so I like the fact that it's such a neat flower, and it's strong. It's it's quite short and strong, and so it just performs really, really well in the garden.
Right. And are you a fan of any flowers that you don't sell that maybe you would like to look at selling in the future?
I don't know. We always keep our options open. I wouldn't say I've got a particular fascination with anything in particular
I
think we should be doing. I like a rose, but I don't want to sell them. And so there's various different things that I would, I might look for in my own garden, but not. I'd separate that out from my business thinking for sure. We specialise in what we do, and I think it's really important that we do.
Mm-hmm. So I've noticed that you, as well as the bulbs, you also sell potatoes, seed potatoes.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Is that a standard combination for a company like yours that, you know, to sell both? And how did you come about just, you know, that choosing to do those two things?
I suppose there's a natural synergy in that we've supplied into retail a lot of onion sets and shallots, garlic for many years.
Right.
And so as a farming business, we have a lot of facilities available for sea potato storage, which is really important, and knowledge as to how to store them, which is really important.
Really important. So
it was quite an obvious area for us to get into. We have a lot of the same equipment that you would need.
Yeah.
So why not?
Right.
And so it provides a solution for our customers for one grow your own shop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so the packaging all links together and it's easy for the consumer to understand. So it's not necessarily what everybody does, but it certainly works for us.
And I can understand being in Lincolnshire, you've got the soil, you've got the space to be growing these sea potatoes. So it does seem quite a good, as you said, synergy.
Well, yeah, but the sea potatoes are Scottish sea potatoes.
Okay.
They're recognised as the premium growing area in the country, and so all of the seed is grown up in Scotland.
Right.
We ship it down to Lincolnshire, store it in our cold stores, pack it as needed and distribute it as needed. So a lot of customers will have them, some delivered maybe in December, start the displays then, and gardeners will go and pick the seed that they want and start shooting them. And then others will have more stock in January and then more in February. And so it's really important to stagger that, otherwise those seed can soon start to sprout in the garden centre. So that's why it's really important.
Right.
And Phil, you know what chitting is these days,
now.
Don't you?
I do now. I've had a lesson from Kate.
So you mentioned there about the potatoes being grown in Scotland. Mm-hmm. Is that a climate thing or a soil thing or a combination?
Yes, it's climate predominantly and soil. You've got to have the most the suitable soils for for what you're doing. But it's a climate related thing, there's a specialism then builds around those circumstances.
Right. So we're here at Glee. I imagine this isn't your first Glee as yourself and Taylor's Bulbs. How many years have you been coming?
Well, I know how many years I've been coming, but I'm actually not sure how many years Taylor's Bowls has been coming.
Right.
It's been just something that I've grown up with, working in the business, knowing that all of a sudden everyone disappears off
to Birmingham.
Glee, whatever that is. And so that's many, many years ago. But I've been working in the business now 25 years.
Right.
So, yeah, I've seen a few.
Yeah. Okay.
I've seen a few.
So how are you finding the show this year so far?
Yeah, good. I think that it would be really important today to see a lot of customers.
Mm-hmm.
I know the team have been reporting to us in the run-up to the show that today they're expecting to see a lot.
Okay.
And so that's what we're hoping for.
Proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. One of the things about Glee is the exciting new products that get shown here. Have you got any innovations or new products that you're bringing to market that you're showcasing at Glee this year?
Yeah, we've developed some new grow-your-own collections. And so we've put them into the new products for a bit of exposure.
Yeah.
Right.
But actually, they've been really well-received by customers that we've already been going to see with these products.
Tell us a little bit about those.
So what it does is it makes life easy for the consumer. They have a selection of sea potatoes for salad production. They have a selection of sea potatoes for the spread of harvest. And a selection of different veg crops as well.
Okay.
It takes away the decision-making that I think can be quite intimidating, not just on grow-your-own products, but also on flower bulbs.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we're doing an increasing amount of this thinking for the consumer and providing the solution. So I think a garden centre environment can be a little intimidating.
It can.
And we want those consumers that walk in to see a massive great big bulb display or grow your own display and just think, I want to try this, but I just don't know where to start.
Yeah.
There's the solution.
Yeah.
So have you also got slightly smaller numbers? Because sometimes, you know, you want a potato, but you don't want 40 bulbs, 40 seed potatoes, sorry.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice if you have a kind of mix and match. I like that idea.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's make it affordable.
Yeah.
Keep it impulse and also recognise that, yes, not everyone has an allotment.
Yeah.
So I've noticed in our conversations just recently, you know, lots of people have been saying similar sort of thing. You know, we had during lockdown lots of people coming into gardening for the first time, and it's actually, you know, they are novices, you know, and they need that, have their hands held, you know, as they go about doing these things, and you know, in a way of trying to make sure we don't lose them from the from the category. Mm. You know, there's suddenly things, life gets hectic again.
Yeah. The weather gets awful.
Yeah. Yes. And they go, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And it just gets too much.
Yes.
You know, so I think that's, I think it's good.
Yeah. The more we can keep this category going, the better.
Yeah. And I think you've got to be careful not to dumb things down either, because people are aspiring to learn. They want to, they want to learn. They want to work out why they've seen their neighbours doing this, or a parent doing this, or whatever, whoever it is that's got them into this way of thinking. And so there's one way of doing it, which is to make it idiot-proof. But then there's another, which is to say, no, I understand that you're actually looking to, you're aspiring to get into this.
Yeah.
And so I've got to give you enough information without overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
And making you think that you've got to be an expert, and above all else, give them the best chance of success.
Absolutely. Well, but just the process of planting a bulb or a seed potato, you've got to know a little bit about what then works. Haven't you? Mm. It's not just you're planting up a container.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to know a bit more. And I mean, I personally, I'm not just saying this because we've got you here. I just love a bulb. I love the fact that you've got this kind of ugly, and you know, they're not the most beautiful brown kind of thing that you put in the ground and you leave it during the winter months.
Yeah.
And then suddenly in the spring, when everyone's so fed up, you're just absolutely rewarded with this kind of blast of colour.
Yeah.
And it just still, you know, 25 years later, it still gives me that joy, you know. And I love that about bulbs, because they're so unassuming.
We talk about selling the promise. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're doing. And to give the joy of colouring.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the purchases are driven by colour.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important for display, and to make sure bulbs can often be forgotten as well. And so it's really important that they're somewhere where the impulse shopper is going to see them.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, it's quite simple to see tulips coming up in the neighbour's garden and thinking, oh, I'd like some of those.
Yeah.
But of course, we've got to have got the message across at the previous September, October.
Yeah.
And so we do have this battle for space for Christmas, because Christmas is really, really important for customers. But we need to make sure that we maximise our opportunity before Christmas really takes over.
So as a bulb producer, how do you go about developing new varieties to bring to market?
It tends to be quite a specialist activity.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, the growers will be producing the stocks that we are we're planting in our gardens.
Right.
The hybridizers often just do hybridization.
Right.
So there are various different methods that you can use, and paintbrush.
Yes.
Is the old traditional style for many.
Still used, is it? Goodness me.
And a lot of hard work and a lot of patience. And we visit some of these trial grounds regularly, but it's sometimes you can be looking at things and they're wonderful. Next year, they're gone.
Right,
They just become susceptible to a problem, or something is seen that's unstable in them.
Mm.
And so we keep our eye on those at that stage, but it's interesting more than it's valuable. It's when you start to get into having a bit of production on the go, that's when it's most interesting, because then they've gone through that initial test period.
Yeah.
Okay. You can be many, many years from developing a new cultivar to the point that it's actually
you can sell it
in production. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that development isn't something you do. You buy into that.
Yeah. With the DAFs, we have a big collection that we built up over time. It's the collection that we exhibit at the Chelsea Flower Show.
Right.
And so it gives us a natural pool that we can go to and bring some of the varieties out of there, bring them on in production, in mass production, our main stocks as we call them. And then we can see how they go, and they can retire as well back into the collection.
Yeah, something I'm reading at the moment is just as an aside. I'm reading a biography about Ellen Wilmot, who's a sort of horticulturalist. back at the turn of the century, and I was saying in that book that there was over that time, there was a craze for daffodils, very much like the tulip craze,
right?
But in Holland, you know, a century or so before that. So
tulip mania.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really big thing.
That
sort of people love of so many different varieties.
Yes, and that's actually, it's not necessarily understood, because it's what draw me a daffodil. Well, it's yellow and that's it.
Yes.
And it flowers in about March.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get we try and educate that you can have the DAFs that are appearing in January, and those that are appearing in May.
Yes.
Sure, the majority are yellow, and sure, the majority are in the middle. But there is an extended flowering period.
And lots of different colours.
Yeah, that's right.
Matthew Potted was talking about it on Gardener's Question Time, saying his favourite was, I can't remember, Talia, the white, which I must admit I love that one as well, especially for bringing indoors.
It's great in deciduous woodlands, sort of, in long grass, and really natural looking daff.
Really, really pretty.
So looking at your business, Adam, over the past 12 months, what sort of challenges have you been faced? You know, has there been a specific challenge that, that's really, you know, that you've been having to overcome?
Yeah, weather.
Yeah.
It's not been an easy 12 months.
No.
It was so, so wet when it was at planting time last year. Yeah. Many tulip growers... some of them decided they'd plant early because they could see what was going on and they thought we'd better get going. It then rained cats and dogs.
Constantly.
And so the soil temperatures remained high and they sat in water, which is not good
not
for quality.
Often, yeah.
Then many of the growers couldn't start for weeks. Bear in mind that most of the time all of the tulips are in the ground by the end of November. There was still some planting going on in the middle of January this year.
Wow.
And some of them just didn't go in at all.
Right.
So it's impacted on the harvest of tulip bulbs for sure, but it's also mirrored across other types of bulbs here and there, but it was tulips in particular that impacted. But we're talking about worldwide production here. We're talking millions and millions of bulbs. So actually the impact that you see in a garden centre environment is minimal.
Because
that's what we do.
Yeah.
We insulate from the actual problem. But yes, it has been a really bad season for that, for planting.
And does that impact for the next few years, or is it just the next year and then you can start again? Or if you're breeding, I suppose that's just going to keep impacting for quite a while?
Well, it could recover reasonably quickly, but I think that the naturally there's a shortage of planting stock because the grower's been under pressure to supply whatever they had, which tended to be their smaller bulbs that they would otherwise use for planting. And so I think next year there'll be... a shortage of planting, or an area reduction, planting area reduction. All we need, though, is one good growing year, and it'll be corrected.
Okay.
And that's, of course, what you hope for.
Yeah.
What's the perfect growing year? Well, we'll never have that.
No, of course not.
But it's just, as long as it's average, it will recover really, really quickly.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is going to be a little problematic looking forwards. And some a lot of the impact, many, many tulips are grown actually for cut flowers rather than for our uses.
Yes.
For gardens.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that's the industry where you probably see most difference. I think in the cut tulips that you'll see, you may be seen that they've used a smaller bulb, so therefore is a smaller flower, and the price will probably be higher than it was.
Yeah, but again,
hopefully that's short term.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about the negatives of this year. Is there anything happening in the business that you're excited about in the future?
Always.
That's good.
You've got to be an optimist, haven't you?
I think so.
You've got to be a realist and deal with the issues. But yeah, I am optimistic. And I think there's so many things that are being flung at businesses, at consumers. There's so much to deal with. But this industry has is recognised as a very optimistic industry.
Yes.
And we keep powering on.
We keep
motivating ourselves to do a better
resilience.
Job. And that's a brilliant part of the industry, I think.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of faith in the fact that people love their gardening. They might not travel, they might not buy their white goods, they might not buy a new expensive electric car, but they will still garden because it makes them happy. And and so as long as our products remain relatively affordable, then that doesn't mean cheap, of course. It just means relatively affordable for what else we're spending. Then I think there's still a lot of hope.
Good.
Do you export your bulbs?
Yes. And the only exporting actually that we do nowadays is to Ireland.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's something that we've set up the process to do. It's not easy.
I was going to say, has that not been affected by Brexit and all the... let's not get into that.
It's been a pig of a topic, something that's dominated so many
everything,
of us.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
But it is what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
So what we had to do is spend all that time working on all the processes.
and then just get on with it. So, have you had a chance to look around the Glee show?
Yep.
And has anything caught your eye?
Well, I've had a look around, but I'm not shopping.
No, yeah,
you know, okay. I'm not a buyer. So I'm looking for different. Different provider. Mr. Michael Perry. I've seen Mr. Michael Perry. Can I have his autograph?
And, he's a friend of the show, you know.
He'll probably listen to this one. Yeah. So, what have I seen? I've met with a few service providers and so on around the place, which is always interesting. You've got to keep your eye open as to what's going on. I think also understanding some solutions that customers often speak to us about. We often end up as consultants.
Right.
So garden centres.
Interesting.
You
can be having a chat and...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm having a trouble with the EPOS system. Who does a good EPOS system and things like this?
Okay.
So it's surprising, actually, if you do keep your hand in with what's going on, it can be really useful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I've seen a particular product necessarily.
Right. Okay.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up. Thank you so much for your time, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Fascinating.
Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. And you. Thank you
very
so
much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on to our conversation with Jane Hickling, who, among many things, is the allotment cook and BBC Radio Lincolnshire's gardening expert.
Welcome, Jane, to the Underground.
Yeah, welcome, Jane.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
No.
Exciting stuff.
Good. So let's kick off with you telling us a bit about gardening and cooking and all that's been part of your heritage.
Goodness. I mean, where to actually begin? I mean, whenever I do garden talks, I always say, right, we're going to go back to the beginning. And I take them back sort of 100 years to start off with.
Brilliant. We like that.
And actually, I can go back even further than that.
Oh, goodness.
Which is just so interesting. I'm so privileged to have such an amazing background in terms of horticulture. So my ancestors, so looking at the ancestors, were actually royal gardeners on the Royal Windsor Estate.
Wow.
We're not worthy.
Again, not worthy. Virginia Water area, which goes straight into the Windsor area. Yeah. And actually, if we go back sort of a few hundred years, I actually had some of the ancestors who moved over to Virginia in America, and then they moved back to Virginia Water. So quite often you have historians looking at the history of that particular area and saying, well, we can't see any links with Virginia in America. So, well, actually, no, there is, because my family.
Right.
So that sort of went up until, and I have a beautiful photo of my granddad when he was about 2 or 3 years old. So it must have been about 1918, this photo.
Right.
With his parents, and I assume his grandparent, and obviously looking like gardeners.
Oh,
and it's
with the tweed waistcoat,
with the little flat caps, the whole thing going on.
Fantastic.
And so, you know, like most people say that they were inspired to garden by their grandparents, and I'm no exception to that one as well, because I did spend a lot of time with my maternal nan and granddad during summer holidays. They weren't gardeners as such by the time I came along, but I say that they had their own garden. They had a veg garden, and it was a long garden. Yeah. My granddad had his shed at the bottom of the garden, which we weren't allowed to go in.
Right.
Goodness knows what he had in there.
I don't want to know.
So obviously that was the inspiration. And obviously I gardened and cooked, and my mum was a real cook. In fact, again, going back to the royalty, just name dropping again, my nan was actually a cook in the royal household.
Oh, my goodness.
And actually, it's only about 4 or 5 years ago when I was about to go on to a radio programme to talk about cooking, when my mum dropped this little shell on me of, well, my granddad was one of the first chefs at the Dorchester.
Oh my goodness.
How did I not know this
before? Why are you only telling me this now?
Yeah, why are you only telling me this now? So, yeah, so a whole load of heritage. And I really sort of, after my grandparents died, got myself back into gardening. We're going sort of about 27 years ago. Gosh, that's such a long time. when I actually sort of got my first little cottage, and I particularly got this cottage because it had a long cottage garden with a little stream at the end. An apple tree, a cooking apple tree. And I actually had some money from my grandparents, and it went on the garden because I thought, that's what they would have liked.
Yeah.
I've sort of kept on coming back to that. So, you know, I've lost my mum and my stepdad, who are both gardeners as well. And I've done exactly the same thing. I've spent it on the garden because they were also gardeners as well.
Oh, that's beautiful. That really is lovely.
Yeah, and that really sort of, that story that's wrapped up within that, within your garden. Mm-hmm. It's lovely to be a place where you can remember them as well, you know.
And definitely. And again, it's one of those things that I do quite often when I'm doing gardening talks. So I'm talking through gardening for mental health and well-being. So I really came back to it massively about 12 years ago when I had a complete mental health breakdown. And I know we talk about that quite a lot now, but back then it was sort of counselling tablets off your pop. Mm-hmm. But obviously, because I was going through that, I didn't have a job. I lost my job as a result, because actually the mental health was as an impact of work-related stress. And I thought, right, how am I going to feed my family? Because, you know, quite often people talk about, well, you know, people on low incomes, they just feed their children junk food. Well, it's cheaper. That's why. If you only have a certain amount of money to spend a week.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're going to buy a punnet of strawberries, which will cost you like £2, are you going to buy a packet, big multi-packet of crisps that'll last you a whole week, you're going to go for the cheaper option, unfortunately. And my children love strawberries, and I was like, I can't give it to you. Right. Okay, go back to my roots. I'm going to grow it.
Brilliant.
And that's what I did. And as a result of that, I started to realise, actually, this is really good for me. I said, you know, you can swear at weeds because it doesn't matter. They deserve it. You can get all that out. And, you know, and if you cry, you're just watering your plants, that kind of stuff. And I said, oh, this is good. And then obviously people started to talk about social therapeutic horticulture. Mm-hmm. And it's just like,
that's what I'm doing.
And actually, you know, having been through quite a lot of grief in terms of loss of family members, I go back to the garden. That's where I go.
So you have this, I think you've explained that really well, this connection between gardening and food. What made you turn that into your vocation? Is it your vocation?
I think it's because I know what it's like. I do an awful lot of community growing, community gardening. Obviously, working with children because I am a teacher by trade, which I still do on a part-time basis and amongst everything else.
Squeeze it in.
Because I know what it's like, and quite often you see people doing community gardening, it's just like, well, that looks lovely. Is it what people need? Mm-hmm. And I love the fact at the moment, I've actually worked with quite a few community allotment groups, designed their allotments, come up with ideas as to how they can get funding, how they can get support to do that. And just over the last 6 weeks, during the summer holidays, working with one particular food larder, we've actually been feeding between 500 and 600 people a week.
Wow. That's a massive number.
Which is, you know, and if we weren't doing that, this is the amount of people who would have gone hungry.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, and also obviously I'm doing lots of the florals and the interests around towns, sort of big planters, looking at sustainability, biodiversity and all this kind of stuff, because actually it's not just sort of what's in your belly, it's also what is around you in your environment as well. So they all go hand in hand. But I always say to people, it starts with those physiological needs. If you haven't got food, if you are hungry, you're not going to have that self-worth, that self-esteem, that sense of belonging, because you're rightly going to be focused on the fact that you need the basics.
So let's go back. The Allotment Cooks was established as an online community, offering inspiration. So how did you make that transition from online to working within the industry as you do now, from writing, presenting, influencing?
It was an accident.
Okay.
It was an accident. I had no plan on doing any of this. So basically I started, obviously I had my allotment growing for food, and I was just like, At the time, obviously quite a while ago, there's nobody out there really talking about sort of how you grow stuff and feeding and using recipes. I'm just going to start off a little Facebook members page. And see, you know, if people can just start talking, sharing ideas. And that took off really well. I was like, oh, okay then. And then my members, who I absolutely love, they saved me, to be honest.
Oh, really?
And they asked me, sorry. They saved me. But they did also, they said to me, right, okay, well, you know, it's easy to have all these files and things, but, you know, quite a lot of them traditional, wanted a book. Can we put those into a book? okay, then we'll put them into a book. So self-published in 2016, created the Allotment Cooks A to Z recipe book, which was a collaboration with the members of the community page.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture of their recipes, and I have named them. Oh. So I said, I've named and famed you. They are your recipes. They're in this book. Obviously, the book is where I have collaborated, put them all together. So my name's on it because... Yeah. Well, you have no choice but to do that. But you have, you know, you've given me the recipe. Your name's on that recipe because I'm not going to take the credit for something you have done and you have contributed. Mm. Because why would I? Why would I do that? Yeah. That doesn't support
Well, people would.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Why would I? I wouldn't do that. Yeah. So from there, and then by accident, I ended up on Instagram. And that was really because I had a fake... I had somebody pretending to be me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they actually advertised themselves on my members page.
What?
I know. It's absolutely horrendous. And I wasn't happy with the quality of what this person was actually putting out. I was like, I'm going to have to go on Instagram. And I had to trademark Allotment Cooks and all this kind of stuff to try to stop that happening. And
then
I ended up on Twitter. And then I ended up on YouTube. And then I ended up on LinkedIn. And then I ended up on the radio. And then I ended up... running around the country doing really amazing, exciting things.
It's brilliant.
And community projects. And obviously, we also had lockdown in between all this.
Yeah, of course.
And obviously, with lockdown, because I am part-time teacher by trade, we had to do online lessons.
Yeah.
And I already knew mental health, well-being is absolutely amazing when it comes to gardening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I have my children, my students, right. who I
what
have to look
after. What sort of age group are you talking about?
So 11 to 16 okay. year olds.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So not primary, yeah. 11 yeah. to 16 yeah. year olds. So I had my children, my students, I call them my children. I have Aww. Children of my own as well, but that's what we do. So I thought, right, we're going to start doing some growing online.
Oh, goodness.
And so I actually started off with, so over the next 2 weeks before we go back to school, obviously we didn't know it was going to go a lot longer than that, did we? And I had to think about, because everything was closed, right, okay, what we're going to do, get a tomato out of your fridge, get a container, any kind of container with holes in, get some soil out of the garden, or ask if your parents if you can get some out of a pot plant, put it in there, shove those tomato seeds in there, put it on a plastic bag, and see who can grow the biggest tomato plant.
Oh, amazing.
And obviously it went on and on and on. And every single week I was doing these little videos, right, okay, so-and-so told me that their tomato plant is now at such and such a size. Got them really excited about it. And by the end of it, I had to say, right, this is going to end when we get a tomato. As soon as anyone's got a tomato, we're going to measure them. That's it. Because obviously it was rolling on and on.
Yeah,
and on.
Yeah,
I thought,
yeah.
This could go on forever. How many tomatoes have you got? I thought, I'm going to have to stop it at some point and then go on to pumpkins or something, which I did actually go on to pumpkins, I'll be honest with you. And one of my students did actually grow a 6-foot tomato plant.
What?
Oh my
Amazing.
Word.
That's
exactly
some
from
flower.
A tomato.
From a tomato. Not even a packet.
Not even a packet of seeds. And I have to say, I mean, this particular kid, absolutely amazing, amazing. You're going to see her in the Olympics in the next couple of years. She, seriously.
Really?
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Very competitive. And obviously, okay. I didn't have a 6-foot tomato plant. I had a polytunnel. I'm not even going to say she cheated.
What was she feeding it?
I don't know. Well, that was one of the rules. You can't feed it. But I don't know. But what also happened as a result of that is when we did go back into schools, my head teacher at the time, because obviously secondary schools, it isn't on the curriculum. Yeah. And I have such a passion about getting it on the curriculum. Said, right, we're going to have it on the curriculum for this group of children. Wow. You're going to create a
Keep
school
doing
garden.
It.
So I did a school garden, wrote a curriculum for them. Yes, and trying to explain hand pollination of pumpkins to sort of 13-year-olds.
That was fun.
I did think I was going to lose my job at one point.
Oh, I love it. Well, so, I mean, it's a silly question, really, but, you know, you are a really popular influencer. You're doing collaborations. You still have this love of community, though, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how important is that to you? Now you're so famous.
I'm just walking down the street. No. It's just so important because it is just so exciting to change situations, to change people's lives.
Right.
And obviously, the growing of the food and it going to the food larder is one
that
thing.
That is, yeah.
Which is obviously really, really important to me. Also involving children and disability groups is so important because, you know, that they're getting... during lockdown, we had the five stages, the five things that we had to think about. I'm just going to try and remember them all now. It's like getting outside, keeping connected, keeping active.
Yeah.
And there's two others. Which,
can't remember.
But basically, all five of them, you're thinking now, Phil, aren't you?
Yeah.
So all five of them absolutely just went, well, that's gardening.
That's gardening. Tick all those boxes.
It's ticking all those boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
And during lockdown, during COVID, we all said, right, we're not going to forget all this. You know, we've learned something amazing. We all then went back to the new normal and a lot of people just forgot everything.
I know, yeah. Heartbreaking.
And you had that with allotments as well. Lots of people did have more time. They could go to allotments. Oh, it's a funny story about lockdown, actually, with that one. I'll tell you. Now I've said I'm going to have to tell
you.
You've
got to tell us
now. Obviously, when lockdown happened, everyone was panic buying toilet rolls.
Yes.
Panic buying. Didn't know we could go out. So I panic bought a pop-up greenhouse because all my seedlings were in the greenhouse at the allotment. I didn't know if
you could go to the allotment, of course, yeah.
Well, it then transpired that you could.
Yep.
At the time, we didn't know.
No.
So that was my panic. We didn't have any toilet roll in the house, but we had a pop-up greenhouse. Yeah.
Priorities.
That's a gardener's priority, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, kids.
You can use a dock leaf.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to nature, kids. Going back to nature.
So what subject is it you actually teach?
So, a combination. So, originally, I am a drama teacher.
Okay.
Drama.
Okay.
Nice, darling.
Right.
Then English media studies and film studies. And obviously, a little bit of gardening in there as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's why you've got all the pizzazz.
Very dramatic all the time.
So, we're obviously here at Glee.
Yep.
So what is it that brings you here? And have you been before?
This is my first time.
Oh, I have
not been to Glee before.
Oh, exciting.
Because obviously, you know, with the day job, part-time as it is, can't always get everywhere.
No.
And I have such envy sometimes when I'm looking at it and I want to be there as well. So, it's my first time this year. And it's basically, there's so many amazing trades out there, which obviously we get to see some of them, but we don't get to see all of them.
No.
And I'm actually really passionate about small businesses who are coming up and emerging.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we need to support these guys, especially when they have some just amazing, outstanding products and ideas. Yes, you know I adore Rachel.
Yes.
I've been sort of championing her cause for more than a year.
Yeah.
And last year I had my top 10 gifts for gardeners, which I did on the radio and I did on my social medias
as well.
And obviously Rachel was on there.
Yeah.
Also had Lucy Hutchins with She Grows Veg was on there.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm sort of like, I can pick them. It's all down to it's down to the fact that these ladies are just
amazing,
amazing innovators, and Rachel is just amazing. I don't collaborate with Rachel.
Not yet.
No, actually, I'm not going to.
Oh, okay.
And that sounds really mean. And the reason I'm not going to is because I love her stuff, and I want people to know that I love her stuff
Love her stuff, not because she's paying
not
you to love it.
Not because of anything else. Mm-hmm. And she is just brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. We had her on yesterday.
I know.
So that was great.
Amazing.
And she's come all the way from Orkney. Wow.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to have a look round the
Has anything caught your eye?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've just seen, is it Ascallon, who have got the most amazing structures and frames, which is like wrought iron.
Oh,
and I've just sort of gone, it was amazing. And then I was talking to the guys there and I said, oh, you need to talk to so-and-so. He does drop shipping as well. And he does this because it's a family business.
Right.
I was like, he does drop. And he might build it. So I tell you what, get him over here, because if he can get that in my truck and he can build it for me, I'll be happy as anything. Absolutely stunning, stunning things.
Right.
Obviously, Deep, if you are here. Heart of Eden.
Yes, my guys. We're going to talk about that. Yeah.
My guys. They are here. So I've obviously spent a little bit of time with them
of
this
course.
Morning. Taylor's Bulbs. So I am Lincolnshire.
Of course.
So I've been over, and you've actually not long ago had Taylor's Bulbs
That's
on.
That's right, yeah.
Absolutely fab. Fabulous. And
fabulous family business, aren't they?
Again,
I
love my family businesses. Yeah. I'm actually missing British Garden Centres here today because they are my local Lincolnshire family business as well. Lincolnshire family business.
Everything goes on in Lincolnshire.
I mean, non-gardening related. So I just met this lady, Kimmy B, and she's got these scents and obviously florals and it's like essential oils. And rather than re-diffuse, she's actually got this sandalwood sort of flower, which actually helps to get that sort of scent out to your room much more.
Aroma distributor.
Yes,
sort of
that's
thing.
The best word.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. Right. This sounds amazing.
Sounds like we're going to
do it. Even better is some of her products actually support Pancreatic Cancer UK as well.
Wow.
So I'm just like, I love you. I love you even more because you're a charity as well. So yeah, all about community.
Have
so,
a look at
so
that.
So many things. I need to keep going around though. Keep
yeah, definitely.
Around.
Yes. And there's like three halls. It's massive. And there's Source Garden as well. So goodness me. So you briefly touched on Heart of Eden.
Yes.
And you work in collaboration with them and they're here exhibiting. Mm. So how does a collaboration work? And how have you found working with their peat-free compost?
I have been actually using their peat-free compost from before I was collaborating with them. So, again, it's one of those things that, you know, just like I wasn't going to steal people's ideas for their recipes, why would I?
Okay.
I'm not going to promote a product that I don't like or don't use. Because, I mean, why lie? And especially if you end up sort of, and it has been over a year that I've been working with the guys. If you've got a long sort of relationship that's developing, it's got to be based on truth. Otherwise, it's not going to sustain itself. And I do use it. I use all the products across my whole allotment.
Well, you wouldn't want to keep using it if it wasn't any good.
Yeah.
You are growing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'll be honest, I have
stuck with it.
Sort of done that in the past where I've been sent things and I've used it and I was just like, I scorched my plants.
Ooh.
You know, from other producers. Yeah, I'm not going to name who they are. So,
off record.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Oh, I'm well trained. So, yeah, I love their products. So I sort of just started talking about, I love your products. And they went, we love what you do. And I was just like, that's amazing. You're amazing. And it's like little conversations. It's like, I want to work with you. And then, started for that collaboration sponsorship, which was really just really quite organic. Like I like my gardens and natural. And it just came together. It's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Oh, fantastic.
So what are some of the opportunities that you've got coming up over the next year?
Oh, goodness me. There's just so many things. Sometimes I'm a bit fly by the seat of my pants because I still have a lot of the community stuff going on.
Right.
Radio. We're obviously looking for more collaboration, seeing what else I can do.
Right.
I've just spoken to a few people here today. There's an absolutely amazing little sort of bird feeder with a camera on. I'm just speaking to the girls over there.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
That's really exciting because, again, it's wildlife and we've got to look after our biodiversity and our wildlife. It's something I really believe in. And they said, we can collaborate. I said, no, you're a small company. You're an emerging company. And I just want to keep on championing, you know, those people up and coming because one day they're going to be doing all the big stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
then they can come to you.
And then they can come back to me and say,
a little thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you are the allotment cook.
Yes.
And cooking is your absolute passion with your produce. So do you have a favourite recipe that you can share with us for the autumn?
Okay, so because throughout the year it changes.
Yes, I'm sure it does,
yeah. Because everyone says, this is my favourite thing to grow. This is my favourite thing to grow. Actually, I think probably, and I've said this before, so I'm going to stick with it, sweet corn on the cob is my favourite.
Mine's been dreadful this year, though. Yeah, terrible.
I have to say, normally on the variety that I grow, because I go back to Saint Marcus, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Goldcrest, I think it is. Goldencrest. I usually have sort of about four or five ears of corn on them.
Wow.
On this year, it's been one.
Right.
Although on the community plot, which is actually still my sown sweet corn, same variety as that too. But sweet corn seems to be a bit
not as good
this year compared to usual. But I love that. That's straight off the plant. Try and eat that within 2 hours of actually picking it. Otherwise, all the sugars go starch.
Nice.
And I did actually have that for dinner a couple of nights ago. Mm. And I was sitting there making some noises that my husband was a bit jealous of. Sorry, don't make those noises. Going into this season, so obviously we've got loads of pumpkins and squashes. Got to be pumpkins and squashes. Obviously, pumpkin pie is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have to say, I think I've still got about 15 in my freezer
last year. Oh my goodness!
I made so many, and I was just like, I tell you what, I'm going to sort of over the whole year, every couple of weeks, just take one out, defrost it, and I haven't done it. And then this is why my freezer is full because I'll do it again, same again this year. I've got to make some more. Oh, it's already full. But I really love butternut squash, mm-hmm. roasted butternut squash, mm. and sweet potato soup.
Oh, lovely.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you have to roast it beforehand, so it actually releases all those lovely sort of sugars right. and okay. absolutely delicious.
So you roast both of them?
Yeah, roast yeah. both of them.
Oh, I'm really hungry.
I know.
Yeah.
So do you have any, do you put any spice in with it just to zhush it up a bit?
Nutmeg. I love nutmeg. Okay.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I know it's a bit of an odd one, but a lot of sort of the Italian-inspired sort of dishes that I do, I put nutmeg in it because okay. it just adds in there.
But not too much, is it?
Not, no, nutmeg. You yeah. don't want to go too much, otherwise yeah. you'll put it in the back of your throat. Oh. Yeah, just a little. Yeah.
I'm really hungry.
Yes,
I think we've had one stale croissant today.
Yeah. So now I'm thinking about roast parsnip and red pepper soup as well. Soup.
I love soup. And actually, this morning, it was autumn. Was it? If not winter, yeah. actually.
I know.
So
just,
chilly.
I don't know what to wear yeah. all the yeah. time. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Temperatures fall.
Layers. No such thing as the wrong weather.
Just the wrong clothes.
Exactly. Well, I think that's a really good place to leave it. So thank you so much, Jane, for coming to see us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank
and
you.
And enjoy the rest of the show.
I will.
Yes, enjoy.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.